Good evening, good evening. Welcome to your Wednesday Night Live. And it is the 19th of March, 2023. Thank you for joining. Let's get it on. Let's push the envelope a little bit tonight. I have been a little bit under the weather, of course, as you may or may not have heard of lately. So I am back and ready to rumble, ready to roll, ready to push the envelope. Let's kick it a little bit tonight. Which means, spice me up, baby. I'll do my best to answer as much as humanly possible, and then some. That will be the goal. All right. Rude. Love the show, Steph. Hopefully I'll be able to hear you tonight live. Any thoughts on why such little news coverage on the astronauts returning back to Earth? You would think it would be a celebrated event, no matter who brought them home. Do you think this division will ever ease, keep up the brilliant content? Well, eventually the sun will explode or cool down and tensions between the left and the right will minimize. So, you know, everybody forgets the blowback. Everybody forgets the blowback. So, he's cutting a government. Now, a lot of people rely on government. A lot of incompetent people rely on extra money, job security, time off, bonuses, pensions, and free healthcare from the government. And people don't like it when you take away their ill-gotten gains. So everyone, oh, we're going to cut government. Woohoo! And then there's the blowback, which is, you know, terrorist attacks on Tesla owners and Tesla showrooms and so on. It's tragically predictable, tragically common, and of course it's applauded. It's applauded. So I mean, they've hacked into, I assume, Tesla, and they found the names of people who own Teslas, and they've published their home address and says you can be targeted, and the only way we're going to take you off is if you send us proof that you have sold your Tesla. Straight up domestic terrorism. Which is the use of violence for the pursuit of political gain. And it just shows you the left have nothing, nothing as far as morals go. Because not 8 minutes ago, they absolutely loved and worshipped electric cars as the salvation of the planet. Now you see they're adding to the CO2 by burning Teslas to the ground. So. There's blowback, and it's going to be ugly and so on, right? But yeah, everybody thinks, because, you know, the movie always, that's what I like about the book, The Hobbit. It doesn't just end with the defeat of Smaug. Then there's a whole battle over the treasure, right? Everybody forgets the blowback. Just because you attack or take away someone's value doesn't mean that they're going to just sit there and take it. They're going to fight back, and usually brutally. And ill-gotten gains, as in unjust government benefits, gets responded to by, right? I mean, the interruption of theft, I mean, go watch The Godfather, right? The interruption of theft gets responded to with a flurry of violence. Thank you for the tip. Where were these activist judges that care so much about principles and the constitutionality of deporting foreign gang members during COVID-19 when our rights were being routinely violated? Well, right. Where was the Constitution? The Constitution. So I'm no lawyer, but my understanding of this whole situation is that judges cannot order the president. Judges exist with regards to the president, and in particularly with regards to foreign policy and executive orders, which are the two things under contention in the American judicial system at the moment, as it is so called. Judges exist in an advisory role to the president. They cannot enforce anything. They can advise. They cannot enforce. Have you seen the video of Alec Baldwin and his wife, Hilaria, being interviewed on a red carpet? Looks like he's already serving a sentence. Yeah, I don't. You know, a bitchy wife. Thank you, Dorbins. Thank you, Enoch. A bitchy wife is punishment for being an asshole father. go and listen to, there's recordings all over the place. Go and listen to Alec Baldwin chewing out his 13-year-old daughter and calling her, if I remember rightly, a thoughtless little pig or something like that. The man is empty, soulless, vainglorious, and willing to wax your car for $8 and a handjob. So that he ends up with a plastic-faced witch and a half. I mean, how am I supposed to feel any sympathy at all? I mean, this is a guy who was paid by, you know, pretty terrible leftists to mock Trump for years. Took all that money. And you think he's going to, the man has no virtue whatsoever. You think he's going to have love? No, he's not going to have love. You only get love through virtue. Only get love through virtue. Not a virtuous man at all. At all. So, sorry, why was the media not celebrating the return of the astronauts? Because, at least according to some sources, the astronauts, there was a chance, Elon offered to get the astronauts back earlier, but for political reasons, he was not allowed. They don't like the fact that Biden couldn't get him back, and Elon does, and they don't want people to have a positive view of Elon because he's the Grinch who's stealing all of the stolen money from the Steelers. All right. Let us get to your questions. Have you seen the new polls for the upcoming Canadian election? Supposedly the Liberals are ahead. Well, I mean, but the Canadian government is subsidizing the non-native population, the hiring of newcomers and so on with tax breaks and wage subsidies and all of that. So, all right. Hey, Steph, my wife and I are having a first child this August. Do you have any tips for first-time parents? We are super excited. Thank you. Just donated at freedomain.com/donate. So be prepared for ego death as a parent. Be prepared for ego death. When you become a parent, you get a blissful relief from self-involvement for the rest of your natural born days. I have a bit of water stuck in my ear. It's driving me a little crazy. Anyway, so yeah, you just experience ego death. It's no longer ever going to be just about you. It's about what's best for your children. It's about what's best for your marriage. You are now part of a machine. You are not a self-contained automaton. You are not a robot. You are a cog in a larger machine of protection and provision and the great chain of being. You take your place in the link in the chain rather than being the bike to yourself. It sounds like a diminishment, but it's really not. Sacrificing your ego for that which is greater than yourself allows you to partake of eternity. And there's nothing else that can do it. Everything that is selfish and for your own ego will be voided and consumed when you die. If you are a sex addict and you go and have a lot of sex for yourself, well, all of those memories and all of those experiences and all of that history just die with you, right? So if you do a bunch of drugs, then all of your drug visions and all of your memories and all of that just die with you. If you're an alcoholic and you don't partake in anything larger, all hedonism is mortal. All eternity is immortal. And by sacrificing your ego for the sake of that which is universal and eternal allows you to live forever. This is why we have the story of heaven, that if you pursue virtue, you do not die. That's true. It's true. It's more than true. It's vivid. So ego death is defying mortality and uniting yourself with the eternal, the universal, the unending, and the immortal. And that's what you're doing as parents. It's no longer about you. It's no longer about you. So ego death is something to be striven for with great energy and focus. You should want relief from personal greed. and you should want to, I mean, this is what I've done with philosophy. Philosophy for me required, demanded, and enacted a guillotine execution of my ego. I now bend myself to that which is true, universal, best for the world, best for virtue, best for children. I have sacrificed greed for immediate pleasures for the sake of virtue in eternity. That's the deal. You trade in your selfish pleasures, and in return, you get to live forever and do good and get love. It's a good deal. So you just have to put aside what you want and focus on what is best for the family unit, what is best for society. Now, through that, you get what is in fact best for yourself. I get it. It's not a sacrifice, but you have to let go of petty pleasures. And the parents, I'm not putting you in this category, the parents who do badly are the parents who don't do that, right? As I sort of mentioned many years ago, my father was in charge of me when I was a toddler, a baby toddler, and he wanted to play tennis. And I was a baby toddler. I was crawling. So I was probably less than a year old, because I remember being a year old. It's about probably a year, maybe 14 months. So I was crawling around, and my father was playing his tennis and got distracted or focused on his tennis game, and I ended up crawling into a garden shed and drinking weed killer and almost died. This was, I assume, one of the final straws with regards to my parents' marriage. Now, I hope my father had a really, really great tennis match, because that was kind of it for us. It certainly was it for his marriage, and it was it for his parenting in the immediate or in the moment. Right, so he wanted to play tennis, and he viewed me as a baby toddler as an impediment to what he wanted. That's a bad idea. You put aside what you want, and you focus on what is best for whatever machinery you happen to inhabit. It could be virtue, it could be proselytizing Bitcoin. It could be the promotion of peaceful parenting. It could be a family. It could be like whatever you can do that gives you relief and escape from your own petty self. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished, to get escape, to get away from the infinite grumble and pestilence of immediate needs and moments. My father wanted to win the tennis match, and he lost everything of value. And he was playing with a person as stupendously selfish as himself, who didn't say, "Hey, don't you have a kid to take care of? What are you doing here? You got a toddler. What are you doing?" I said, "I'm going to laugh." But it's like, you win one game and you lose everything else. It's a bad deal. It's a bad deal. Like the guys who sleep with other women, you get one rail session and you lose everything. Or maybe you fake a car driving into a Wile E. Coyote painted horizon, and then you lose everything. Reputation. Now, I don't mind burning my reputation up like a Roman candle or like a nuclear strike zone. I don't mind sacrificing my reputation, because the desire for reputation at the expense of virtue is just another ego greed situation. You got to be willing to burn it all to be good. All of it. All of it. So as parents, it's not about you anymore. It is about what is best for your children. And you focus on that, and the happiness that will come to you beggars belief. You focus on satisfying your own petty preferences and needs at the moment, and you lose everything. You satisfy a petty need in the moment, and you lose everything. All right. Hi, Steph. What is the best way to deal with an antagonistic person who, when they are called out, tries to then appear weak and frail. Like a wife, for example, who all of a sudden claims postpartum depression. If you continue to criticize, you are a jerk. Well, I'm not sure about that example. Maybe postpartum is kind of a real thing. I mean, outside, if the hormonal issues and other medical issues have been ruled out, my general approach, which of course is purely uninformed and amateur, but my general approach is with regards to things like that, the women who are experiencing postpartum depression, and it does happen to men as well, are getting the deep body echoes of a neglected and abused infancy that they're too young to remember, but the body remembers everything. Like when you raise your kids will get to, if you were abused or harmed as a child, your kids will get to that age and your heart will break. And they won't even, they don't know why, they don't know what's happening, but your kids get to a certain age. Let's say you were abused at 9. Your kids get to 9 and your heart will break. They just walk into your heart and it shatters. Just the conveyor belt of time pushes them through your heart and it breaks. So to deal with an antagonistic person who, when they're called out, tries to then appear weak and frail, I mean, depends how risky you want to be. My particular preference is to call them out on the manipulation of being weak and frail. And then, boy, you'll find out what's on the other side of that weakness and frailty. Right? We all know what's on the other side of that weakness and frailty. I'm so sad. Right? You push through that, they'll just flip back on the rage again. Right? It's the old thing. I'm so tired and weak. It's like, oh, let's find out if you're too tired to fight or defend yourself. Oh, look, you seem to have a lot of energy to fight and defend yourself. So you just keep calling out the weakness and frailness. Like, stop pretending you're weak and frail. You were just yelling at me. This is really pathetic. Like, what are you doing? This is really manipulative and stop it. This is just gross. It's gross. Right? Now, they'll try for a little bit, but if you just keep pushing them and saying, no, come on, let's get back on it. Stop with the self-pity. Let's have the conversation. Well, then they'll get angry again, and then you never have to believe the weak and frail thing. The funny thing, we know how 97% of federal workers vote, so the numbers of supporters Trump has lost over the firings is probably in the single digits. Well, it's an interesting question, right? If violence in the pursuit of political goals is terrorism, what does that make the welfare state? All right. I'd love to see you talk to Elon. Would be interesting. I hold not my breath, but it certainly would be interesting. The Steph bot is back up. Sorry, we had had an issue, it was not doing some questions correctly. We've done an upgrade and a retraining and all of that. So the Steph bot is back up. ai.freedomain.com. You do have to be a subscriber to access it, but it's really good. It's really, really good. Really good. All right, I'll wait for your questions and comments. Have you heard about the infinite tween e-drama known as Harry Sisson? I'm going to spell this out just so you know what kind of broccoli hair fringe job we're talking about. Harry Sisson. Sisson? Harry Sisson. Harry Sissy. Anyway, bit too obvious a joke. Have you heard about this e-drama? My God. So young, he's a young Democrat influencer who does these cringe dances with goofy friends wearing socks and crazy footwear. And so he is that kind of guy. And here's the thing, man. Oh my gosh. It's just wild to me. It's just kind of wild. So Sarah Fields is reporting that this got 21 million views as of yesterday to today. So this is a big story. Harry Sisson, this Democrat influencer guy, convinced 11 different women that he had no rasta and respected them for more than their bodies. while persuading them to send explicit photos of themselves through Snapchat, including one from a domestic abuse survivor. When the women discovered each other one by one, he called them all insane and attempted to coerce one of them into telling the public that the photos were fake. A request to the reader, says Sarah. Set political differences to the side. I believe both sides of the aisle can agree that this is unacceptable behavior from a man-child with collectively over 2 million followers. Several of the women involved have made their stances public, but the videos are not receiving much traction while Harry Sisson continues to collect millions of views for his videos claiming that he is a supporter of women and a champion for women's rights. Okay, everybody knows, come on, everybody knows that male feminists are predators in disguise. They're like cuttlefish with roofies. So everybody knows that, right? That's not, that's so obvious a thing. Carly, one of Harry's, what are they? These women who voluntarily talk to a man and send him explicit photos, what are they? Yes, that's right. After 150 years of female empowerment, women making voluntary choices are victims. V for vagina, V for victim. Carly, one of Harry's victims, has described the situation in the most detail. Summary of her videos. According to Carly, Harry, quote, wooed her from the very beginning and convinced her that he respected her for more than physical appearance. She said even though she's embarrassed to admit it, she created a private chat to chat with Harry that was meant for his eyes only, where she shared explicit photos of herself with him. He loved it, she said. He loved that I was not entertaining anyone else the way I was entertaining him. Harry told her that she was wifey material and was sold on her wife applications. After 6 months of this behavior, he told her he didn't want a commitment. She accused him of leading her on, to which he admitted to doing, but also said he should have made his intentions clear. Directly after this, Harry posted a photo of a thirst trap of him and his new girlfriend on TikTok. The video shows him lying in bed with a girl while she provocatively swipes her hand across his face. Prior to the thirst trap, Carly watched Harry go live and observed hickeys on his neck from a different girl. She confronted Harry and he told her she was overreacting. Carly had recently been through a traumatic car accident and was dealing with depression at the time. Carly stated that Harry pounced and took advantage of her sadness. Carly decided to go live on TikTok to share her story, and this was when she discovered that during the 9 months that she was talking to Harry, Harry was leading multiple other women on at the exact same time. He had told them the exact same things and had convinced them to send him explicit messages through the Snapchat platform. Harry told the other women that he had no roster. No roster at all. Receipts of Harry's snaps. One in particular states, explicit language warning, I'd frack you raw after the wine tasting. Which is both exquisitely straight and fantabulously gay at the same time. What can I tell you? As more women came forward, it was determined that 11 women were played by Harry. Another victim of Harry, Sarah provided a long detailed video of her experience. I clipped it for the sake of time. You can find a full video on the TikTok platform, says Sarah. No, wait, what was the woman who posted this? Sarah is a DV survivor. She had posted about her DV experience in October of 2024 for DV Awareness Month. Receipts are of her and her ex following this experience is when she was convinced by Harry to share explicit photos of herself and was told that she was the only one. See the passive voice, right? She was convinced by Harry. The woman has no agency. She didn't jam a phone up her skirt and take a picture of her netherworld and then send it voluntarily to Harry because he asked for it or suggested it. No, no. She was... She was hypnotized by the Harrinator. She was convinced to share explicit photos. No, she sent him. She sent him explicit photos. And that's something that women do in the hopes of hypnotizing a man with sexual energy and getting a commitment. One of the women, who was terrified of Harry's retaliation, so terrified of Mr. 98 pounds dripping wet, bouffant hair, can't grow a beard to save his life, but she's terrified of Harry's retaliation. You put the woman in a state of fear, and that arouses the betas and the simps to go and protect the women, victim. One of the women who was terrified of Harry's retaliation has stated that Harry assured her the screenshots were all fake, but he also told her that he doesn't feel bad about lying about personal things. He told her he didn't lie to her, though. You see? How can a woman possibly be blamed for believing a guy who says, hey, I don't feel bad about lying. Oh, but I haven't lied to you, though. I don't feel bad about lying, but believe me, I haven't lied to you. He then asked her if she wouldn't mind telling people that she had seen screenshots from him proving they were fake, even though she had not. Oh, my gosh. Harry has not apologized for his behavior and called all of these women insane, as seen at the top of this thread. Mobius, this is a great quote. He says, so to summarize, I respect you for more than your body now. Take off your shirt. Oh, no, listen, I mean, in all seriousness, I do feel quite sorry for these women because I don't know, personally, I'm not sure at all how you end up this clueless about male and female nature. I mean, it just takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work. So this guy is, for reasons that pass mortal understanding, for e-girls, I suppose, Harry Sisson is a high-status male. High-status male. That's Mr. Sisson's high-status male. And so because he's a high-status male, if he will date a woman, she becomes a high-status woman. Right? Men have to achieve things. Women just have to achieve men as a whole. I mean, look at the actual income sources of the 10 or 20 richest women in the world. I think all but one or two is the result of taking money from men through the court system as a whole, or some sort of alimony, child support, separation issues. So these women made a sexual play for a man. They sent some of them, at least according to these reports. I obviously haven't verified all of this stuff personally, but I haven't seen a lot of pushback from the comments, so we'll put it as potentially true. But a woman gets interest from a high-status male, and I suppose in his, I don't know, sinister cherub way, he could be conceived of as somewhat attractive. But these women are like, well, I sent him sexual photos, explicit photos, and he didn't commit to me. I sent him nudes or whatever, and he didn't marry me. So these women are on the left, and what that means is they don't have a father in their lives. So because they don't have a father in their lives, they have to learn the painful lessons about predatory male behavior through this. Through this kind of nonsense. All the lessons of history have been scrubbed from our minds, hearts, groins, and loins for the past 75 years. Progressives, just tear it all down. We don't know what it's for. Tear it all down. We don't need shark nets here. We haven't seen a shark here in years. Tear down the shark nets. People get eaten. Oh, shit. That's what those shark nets were for. Sorry. Sorry. Maybe we can sew those limbs back on. Maybe we'll think about the shark nets again. Society as a whole, in general, does not let young men and young women loose with no guidance, no rules, no consequences, no blowback, no reputational damage on the infinite playing fields of sexual wantonness. We don't do that. We don't do that any more than we let 11-year-olds drive cars or fly spaceships. So women, could they attract Harry Sisson based upon their integrity and virtue and maturity? Well, clearly, for many of them, they could not. So what did they do? Flash their tits. Or whatever they sent, right? Okay, so you make a play for a man based upon sex appeal, and it doesn't work. And then, you see, because your sex play, your sexual play, didn't work, well, you are then a victim, right? You are then an oh-so-tragic and sad victim. It's just terrible. And at some point, people will remember why we used to have these rules. So, of course, the problem is the question of victimhood. If women can't choose a good man, how can women choose a good politician? This is the part I don't get. Honestly, don't get. Don't grok, don't fathom, don't understand. Women say, when my whole heart and identity and self-esteem and reputation is on the line, I cannot determine or distinguish a good man from an absolute liar. So if women say, I can't choose a good man even when my heart is on the line, how can they claim through the vote to choose good politicians? And of course, the reverse is true as well, that if men say, well, I didn't know that there were red flags, I had no idea. How could I possibly know? But of course, this is Schrodinger's feminist, right? Empowered when she wants to get something, and a passive, played upon, inert victim when something doesn't go her way, right? All right, let's get to your question. Hi again, says Parallax. Don't forget, you can send me some tips in the apps to Locals and Rumble. freedomain.com/donate is probably the best way to send that over, but I really would appreciate that. It's a bit of a low month. I know March is a bit of a tough month for people. So if you could help out, you know, I mean, I would really appreciate that. You know, of the people on Locals, only 10% of you subscribe. So there's 90% of you, for the most part, unless you've sent in donations in some other fashion, but let's say 80%. So fully 4 out of 5 of you are just consuming ad-free content without donating. That's not the very highest integrity standpoint, in my view. All right. Hi again. Are you familiar with Milton Friedman's economic philosophies? I do not think he was a fan of tariffs. I know that Trump is using them as a negotiation tool, but is he impinging on the free market? I did not and do not have much respect for free market academics. I just don't. In fact, I really don't. But let me double check. I'm pretty sure he was an academic. All right. Nobel laureate, American economist, yes, but in what way? public service. Academic employment. Right. Oh, unable to find academic employment. What happened here? Oh, I began employment with the National Bureau of Economic Research. I'm pretty sure American, oh, private nonprofit research organization. Okay. So that's, you know, want to be fair about that. Oh, yeah. Assistant professor teaching economics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Ah, but then he returned to government service. Right. So government service, academic career, and he joined the Division of War Research at Columbia University. Oh, my God. He worked as a mathematical statistician, focusing on problems of weapon design, military tactics, and metallurgical experiments. Oh, yes, University of Chicago, right. Right. So, let me tell you, and I'm going to be insane about this. I have a personal stake in this, which I won't go into, said fellow will remain nameless, but I have a personal stake. So, to all of the academic free market philosophers, quick fucking question. Just a little question. You say that government monopolies are bad, and then you take a government monopoly position based upon your credentials, because you have to have the stamp of approval from the government through a PhD in order to be able to teach, or a master's or whatever, right? So if government's corrupt and the free market is efficient and moral, why the fuck don't you spend more time in the free market? One of the things that's been quite beneficial to me is, with the exception of one summer as a temp when I worked for the Department of Education, I have not worked for the government. Whole career has been in the free market. I've actually co-founded and grown businesses. I've sold businesses. I've been an entrepreneur for over 30 years now in the free market, and the real free market, right? The free market, like in software, which is very unregulated relative to other professions, and the free market, the absolute Wild West of alternative media. Close to 20 years ago, I put out a call to free market academics, and I said, look, guys, you can leave the giant statist titty junction called academia, sucking off the effluvian blood-soaked titty milk of the taxpayers, and you can join me in the free market. And I said, listen, I will give you free consultation. I will give you my business experience. I built a fairly successful podcast probably 15 years ago, and I was doing all right. I built a pretty successful podcast. I know how to run these things. I know what you can do. Call me. You can leave government employ and you can join the free market that you spent your entire fucking life praising. Shouldn't you do that? Now, finally, there is a venue by which you can get your ideas out to a lot of people. I mean, at my height, man, I was doing 10 to 15 million views and downloads a month. I've had 1 million books downloaded a year. That's a little bit better than teaching 20 people at a graduate level. You can spread the free market while being in the free market. You can join me in the free market that you love so much, and you can just leave the government behind. Now, the reason why this is important is basic fucking integrity, number one. And number two, you won't be a rank stinking hypocrite, which I find the most repulsive thing of all. Personally, it makes my skin crawl. And I'll tell you why. So if you're a free market economist, you're going out into the world and you're saying, you know, we should take away all of these unjust benefits, all of this rent seeking, all of this monopoly privilege, all of this government protected stuff. We're going to take that away from people. And we're going to educate people to the point where they'll accept it being taken away from. So we are going to take away all of these unjust privileges that people get for being yoked up to this sword-wielding Vishnu god of blue rinse death known as the state. Because, you know, it's really bad. It's really wrong. Bad, 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 and wrong. That people take unjust benefits from the state. So we're going to educate people so that they'll understand the rightness and the justice of giving up or taking away unjust benefits from the state. You see where I'm going here, right? Now, if you think that it's wrong to have rent-seeking monopoly privilege and get unjust benefits from the state, how about you give up your state-protected academic positions, your $150,000 plus a year for 3 days' work, 2 days' work, months and months off over the course of the summer, every couple of years, you get a sabbatical where you get to go to cool places, all paid for, get you your little fucking office hours. So you barely work. You get paid massive amounts of money. Oh, and you can't be fired because of tenure. All of these are government monopoly privileges. So the free market academics are saying, hey man, you got to give up your unjust academic privileges. And then I say, hey guys, you won't even have to give up your income because you can come and make money as a podcaster, but here's your opportunity to join the free market you've praised lo these many fucking years. Now, and I said, listen, I will give you free consultation, teaching you how to do it, what to do, so you don't have to make all the mistakes that I made. You don't have to be the first kicking through the door. You can just walk through the door second and brush off some of the splinters. Now, of all of the academics, and Lord knows there were at least 100 or 200 that I knew of who listened to me, of all of the academics who spent their entire fucking careers praising and lauding not just the efficiency, but the virtue and morality of the free market, how many of them deigned to step off their blood-soaked academic titty moats of statist power and join me in the virtue and value of the free market they praise so much, even when I offered them free transitional consultation on how to do it? So you see, free market academics say all these other people, they have to give up all of these unjust privileges. You know, that's so wrong. Okay, well, you guys give up your lead the way. Stop telling other people they have to give up unjust academic privileges. And you give up your unjust statist privileges. Sorry, not that all people have to give up their academic privileges, but all people should give up their rent-seeking monopoly privileges and tariffs. So it's pretty fucking funny to me that free market economists talk about how bad tariffs are. Okay, so you see, the government preventing people from competing you by raising the barrier to entry is really bad. Okay, so can I come and just take your job then? Oh, no, you can't, because you have to jump through all of these government hoops and get all of these credentials, and then you have to join this union. And then... No. So you understand, tariffs are just barrier to entry to compete, right? So free market academics have massive barriers to entry to compete, caused by the government, protected by the government, sustained by the government, in fucking forced by the government. It's repulsive. Honestly, it's repulsive. It's stomach turning. It's bottomlessly hypocritical. Oh, you see, the government promotes corruption and inefficiency, and the free market promotes virtue and efficiency. So I'm going to stay as far as fucking away from the free market as I possibly can and hide out behind the government protection. And then you have the nerve to say to other people that tariffs are bad, you see, because there shouldn't be barriers to entry for competition. But nobody can come and take my job because I have all these barriers to entry for competition called credentialism and government enforcement of the perimeters of my profession. Blah! That's why free market. And see, free market economists, they say, well, but you see, I'm educating people. I'm educating people on the free market. And you see, once people understand the free market enough, then by Jove, they'll choose the free market over statism. It's like you got a fucking PhD in free market economics, and you're staying as far away from the free market as humanly possible without actually joining the North Korean military fucking guard. Oh, well, we're educating people on the value and virtue of the free market. It's like you have 15 years of education in the virtues and values of the free market. You still don't want to join it. You still sucking off the bloody tit of the state. So education isn't going to do shit. And if you think that the free market is virtuous and valuable, which it is, if you think the free market is moral, which it is, and you think that government protection and control is corrupt and immoral, which it is, then step out of that fucking swamp and bloody quagmire into the upper reaches, snow-capped mountains, clear airs, and moral virtues of the free market. But you can't get them to do it. You cannot get them to give up their status privilege. And they lie to themselves saying, well, I'm educating people. It's like, you're the most educated person in the room and you still won't give up your status privileges. Fuck. It's gross beyond words. Yeah, Tom Woods left academia for sure. And Tom Woods does great work and is in the free market and does the marketing and writes the books and does speeches. And yeah, kudos. It's not everyone. It's not everyone. It is one of the most disappointing things that happened in my early career. And here's the funny thing, right? Here's the funny thing. I was not expecting one phone call. I was not expecting one phone call of an academic saying, you know what? I've spent my whole life talking about the free market. Alternative media is the freest market there is. There's no gatekeepers. There's no licensing. Like, it is the Wild West, man. It is the wild. It's the frontier. It's everything that I've talked about. Everything that I've talked about. And they just, is it vanity? Is it pomposity? Is it their wives won't let them? Is it security? Is it like whatever soul rot that goes on in people that they praise an institution and a circumstance that they could absolutely join and be financially okay? For them to resolutely avoid what they recommend to everyone. Well, we've got to cut the welfare state. Bro, you live on the welfare state. You lard-ass toady. You live on the welfare state. Take away the welfare state from single mothers. Why don't you lead the way to the free market that you expect everyone else to get to and to go to? Honestly, I find it revulsion rises in my soul. And I'm not saying it's some big objective thing necessarily, but it's gross. It's truly vile. It's truly vile. It's truly vile. They won't do it. So why the fuck would I care what Milton Friedman has to say about unjust government protections of industries when he worked for the government in academia, which are unjust government protections from competition? Why the fuck would I listen to someone like Milton Friedman about tariffs? So academics don't understand tariffs because academics don't really negotiate, because their negotiation is done for them by their union and shit like that, right? So they don't negotiate. They're not in the free market. They don't understand leverage. They don't understand reciprocal threats. They don't understand escalation. They don't understand that you prevent war by having an army and you reduce tariffs by increasing tariffs. The free market is quality, you see, and government is corruption and waste. So I'm going to not be part of the free market, even though it's become technically possible and has been for 20 years. I'm going to stay away from the free market, which is efficiency and morality, and I'm going to sit around with the government. And that's one thing. At least say, yeah, I'm a fucking hypocrite. Yeah, that's me, man. Yep, that's what they're going to say. That's what they should say. Yeah, I mean, the free market for you. You, poor welfare mom, you should have the free market. No welfare, no subsidies for you. But I want all the welfare protection and subsidies for me. Just go start a company, man. Just go start a company. They're taking the system down from the inside. Yeah, I know. It's really sad. It's really sad. Maybe they fear making the leap, still hypocritical nonetheless. I don't give a shit that they fear making the leap. If you can't do it, don't demand other people do it. That's all. That's all. Don't say to other people you have to subject yourself to the rigor and discipline of the free market because it's moral and virtuous and good and right, and then hide behind all of the weapons of the state you can get your hands on. Don't say to other people, well, you know, tariffs protect an industry and that's unfair and unjust, while you sit in academia, which is one of the ultimate fucking cartels in the universe. Government cartel. Why would I don't care to read people's imaginary motives because I'm an empiricist. And as an empiricist, I don't care what people might secretly think because it's unprovable. What I do care about is what people do. And when people say, from their privileged position of state power, when they say other people should subject themselves to the discipline of the free market while hiding from the free market and taking government-protected benefits, summers off, years off, barely working, massive pay, all because of the government. All because of the government. For them to say, well, you see, the poor single mom with three kids, she should not get welfare, but I should be protected from competition by the government and have massively artificially high wages and benefits and time off because of the government. That is, honestly, I don't even know how repulsively aristocratic that is. We should cut welfare for single mothers, but I'm not giving up one fucking penny of my unjust privileges working a couple of hours a week for 200 grand. Some 4 months off in the summer. Every 5 years I get a paid vacation to farting around in a library in fucking Barbados. Jesus H. Christ. I mean, I hope you can get just how fundamentally repulsive this is. It's beyond horrifying, really. And so I don't listen to people about the free market if they resolutely have stayed as far away from the free market as humanly possible while demanding everybody else subject themselves to the discipline of the free market. Like, I have no interest what people... I've read a bunch of Milton Friedman in the past and, you know, interesting stuff and all of that, but it's all just... It's just a ookie-cookie circle jerk of free market avoidance. Yeah, it's gross. You know, lead by example, right? Lead by example. Lead by example. It doesn't mean that their arguments are false, right? I get that. Personal hypocrisy does not mean that their arguments are false. But I'll believe a free market economist about how good the free market is and how bad government protection is when he's not sucking off the bloody tit of government protection and staying as far away from the free market as humanly possible. Then I'll listen. I don't take diet advice from the fat guy. I don't take regrowing hair advice from me. So. All right. I hope that helps and makes some kind of sense. But yeah, I was pretty close to some free market economists when I was younger, and every now and then I take my Dramamine and check out what they're doing. I saw one of them defending the pharma industry the other day. I thought, oh, God. Oh, please. They've all turned into Ayn Rand villains, honestly. Except at least Ayn Rand villains are kind of honest about their villainy, right? And look, I'm sure that there's some people, but I like the free market. So you know what I did? I'm pro free markets. You know what I did? Joined the fucking free market. That's what I did. I can't, because I couldn't talk about how great the free market is and then avoid the free market with everything that I can. How could I say? Well, you know, voluntary transactions are moral, and forced to protect government industries is immoral and leads to corruption and inefficiency. So I really want to be part of a system protected by the government that promotes apparently corruption and inefficiency and immorality. I mean, would you take marriage advice from a woman who took phone calls from her husband and screamed at him during the session? Nope. Does that mean that every single one of their arguments is false? It's like, if you feel that the cartelized protection of industries is immoral and you're part of academia, I don't care. I don't care what you have to say. I've heard you say this before, the old problem. Sorry, I'm having trouble hearing your words over your actions. Don't demand moral ideals from other people that you specifically oppose and reject yourself. That's all. It's repulsive. It's vile. I mean, it's you know, like there's some fucking climate conference. And they're in Brazil and they're literally clear cutting through the Amazon to get there. Or like, you know, all of the people who are like, well, you can't have too much meat. And they fucking load their 18-wheeled SUVs into their giant planes to fly around the world. Like, it's that gross. It's that gross. You love the free market. You respect the free market. The free market is good and virtuous. Then do it. Join it. But don't lecture other people to give up government benefits while you cling desperately to yours, even when there's an alternative that's available. My God, wouldn't it have been powerful if the free market economists had said, damn, Steph's shown that we can make a living on the internet. And the funny thing is, they would have been way wealthier, because it was in the alternative media that Bitcoin first showed up. It didn't show up in academia. They would have made a fortune. That's what's so sad. They would have made a fortune. They would have been far wealthier if they joined my call for joining the free market. They'd have had far more influence, far more fun, made far more money. But no, they cling to this death grip of a dying, bloody-fisted system. And don't even have the good grace to say, Should have. Nope, they can't. I think it's vanity. I think it's, well, I'm a professor of halala, and these students, they need me so much, and they need me to mark them well, and I'm bringing this person along, and there's this cute little girl over here, and okay, maybe not in economics, but I think it's just vanity. I think they can't give up the status. Dr. So-and-so, I'm Dr. So,
I have a Prius, and I trundle up to my office, and I sit there, and I hold court, and these people come, and they need me to approve of them, and they need me to approve their thesis, and they need good grades for me. And I just, oh, it's so delicious for my ego to have people just licking my boots, because I can offer them the same goodies down the road that my forefathers offered me. And oh, it's, I think it's just vanity. I think it's just straight up. They don't want the ego death of the free market, because the ego death of the free market is you got to do what the customer wants. You got to do what people want. It can't be about you and your vanity and you looking good and you seeming smart. I have to provide value to you. I must provide value to you. It's not about me. It's not about me looking smart. It's about me trying to provide some value to you, which means I can't be selfish. I can't be greedy. I can't be egotistical. And they don't even hide it, right? I mean, to hide it would be like, you know, there's these hypocritical preachers who preach fidelity and then have affairs, right, with the church secretary or something. But at least they hide it. At least they fucking hide it. So some free market guy could say, well, I quit. Some free market academic, I quit academics. I'm going to go into the free market. I'm going to take Steph's good advice, because he's got, at that point, I had like 10 years of experience as an entrepreneur, a little more. And by the time I was offering this, I'd had years of experience in alternative media. Free consultation. I'll get you set up. I'll tell you how to do it. I wanted the competition. I wanted the competition. So if they had stepped out of that government-protected cartel, that would have been so inspiring. But it's not about, you see, it's not about what's good for the free market. It's not about what's good for truth and reason. Right? Because you could have said, I got to stay here because, you know, there's no alternative media and nobody's going to publish my books. Okay, whatever, right? But, you know, by the year 2000 or 2005, for sure, you could leap. You could make the leap and you could become a podcaster. You could become whatever, right? Do all that. Like Peter Schiff's not an academic, right? Loves the free market. Not Bitcoin so much, but loves the free market. Imagine the credibility if they had said, oh my gosh, I finally get to spread more information in the free market. Wow. This is fantastic. I get to leave academia and work on the free market, which I've always told everyone is what I need and love. So if they'd hidden it, that would be have more integrity, right? So if some academic, let's call him Bob, right? Bob, the Dr. Bob, right? So if Dr. Bob had quit academia and had said, well, I'm going out on my own and I'm going to be the free market guy in the podcasting and, right? And he claimed to take donations, but it turned out he was being bankrolled by the Saudis or something, or some Middle Eastern country. Then you'd say, okay, well, that was hypocritical, but at least he was hiding it. Like the academics, they're not even hiding it. They're very immensely and deeply proud of the bloody-fisted, gun-toting, statist, violent protection cartel that they're part of. Because you see it in their bios. Dr. So-and-so of the University of such-and-such. Like, they brag about it. I'm part of a government-enforced and protected cartel teaching everyone else about the virtues and values and need for the free market. God, it's so vile. I have to laugh, otherwise I'll eat my own teeth. Oh my God. They're proud of it. It's literally like some priest, some televangelist teaching you monogamy is the key. And then like on the homepage of his website, it's like, here's a picture of my harem. It's wild. Absolutely wild. It just shows you how deranged modern intellectualism is, that people don't just laugh at these people. Just laugh. It's pathetic. You'd have made more money, had more influence, and had even a shred of integrity if you joined me in the free market. But not one of them did. And again, I'm not saying none of them have done it. But it's really rare. And they're still invited to conferences. Right? I see him. I see him. I see you. I'm still invited on conferences. Oh my gosh. All right.
So in the UK, what percentage of people in the UK, now this is, I assume this is the working population, whatever, right? Oh no, sorry. What percentage of the total population in the UK claim to have a disability? What percentage of people in the UK, 2022, 2023, so a year or two ago, what percentage of people in the UK, total population, not even working age population, what percentage of people in the UK claim to have a disability or be disabled? Chris wins the prize. James a little high. Pendel a little high. Pendali a little high. She's so high. It's, no, not 40%. It's 25%. Now, that's probably close to 45% or 40% of the working age population. But of the total population in the UK, 25%, 16.1 million people claim to have a disability. And 2002, 2003, it was like a little over 10 million. Now it's 16.1 million. And as Zach Goldsmith asked, a very sensible question, how does a society survive if a quarter of its people are, quote, disabled? Here's another one from Darth Powell, Vlad the Inflator. That's pretty funny. Six figures is now lower middle class. If your parents made $100,000 in the 1990s, you'd need $234,465 in 2025 to have the same life. $234,000 is the new $100,000. That doesn't even count unfunded liabilities and the national debt. So I don't think people have become wealthier. It's just inflation. Peter Schiff wrote, in related to this, so far in 2025, he wrote this March 18th, so far in 2025, the S&P 500 is down about 4%, not even a correction, but priced in gold, it's down 18%, almost a bear market. Pricing stocks in real money adjusts prices for actual inflation. Since December 31st, 2000, the S&P is down 60% priced in gold. It's a historic bear market. So over the last quarter century, the S&P is down 60% if you price it in gold. It's down to virtually nothing if you price it in Bitcoin. But this is what I've been saying. It's not a real economy. People say, well, when's the economy? It's not a real economy. The Cabese letter wrote, 41.8% of U.S. homeowners who sought to refinance their mortgages have received an application rejection, the highest share in over 12 years. The percentage has quadrupled since October 2023, according to the New York Fed. Many Americans are seeking to refinance to tap into their recently accumulated housing equity. This would help to cover the rising cost of living and other debt expenses. Lack of refinancing could at some point force people to sell their homes. Something must give. So almost 42% rejection rate for mortgage refinancing. Wow. Okay, let me ask you this. What percentage of people that you know, what percentage of people that you know have a decent amount of savings? Let's say 6 to 12 months living expenses. Right. So, you know, savings. I don't mean like stuff locked away in retirement plans or whatever it is, or, you know, extensions they built under their house. How many people that you know have 6 to 12 months of savings? All right, while you're answering that, let us continue with our facts. Peter Schiff also wrote yesterday, over the next 4 years, 28 trillion of the 36 trillion national debt matures. Financing current deficits will add another 10 trillion. There is no way the U.S. can sell $38 trillion of treasuries with a 4% handle. So either we pay 6% or more, or the Fed has to buy it all. That's wild. I would also encourage the Democrats to keep fighting as hard as they can to keep Venezuelan gang and crime lords in the U.S. Maybe three people. I can see your message. Creativity questing? Questing? So, zero, maybe three people, maybe 15%. Yeah. Yeah, the number of Americans who can cover a $2,000 surprise bill, which, you know, if you have property, it's kind of depressing. It happens all the time. Happens all the time. I miss renting. I really do. I really do. Did you know this? It's pretty wild. According to Wall Street Apes, a Democrat federal judge made it illegal for Republicans to be poll watchers since the 1980s. Democrats have been renewing the injunction every 5 years. This only ended in 2020. It's a quote. Something else people don't know is that starting in the mid-1980s, there was a federal district court judge in New Jersey who entered a consent decree that Republicans could not be poll watchers. So from the mid-80s until 2020, Republicans were not allowed to be poll watchers on these national elections. And what happened was that the judge eventually died, and the Democrats, the DNC, they had to go and get that injunction renewed every 5 to 8 years, something along those lines. And when that judge died, he was replaced by an Obama judge. And they went back to that judge and they said, we want this consent decree in place to making so Republicans cannot be poll watchers and cannot be a part of this process. And the judge said, what in the heck are you talking about? This is absolutely so unconstitutional. And he refused to renew that consent decree. He refused to renew that injunction. So 2020 was one of the first years that we had professional Republican poll watchers in these elections to see what was going on in Atlanta, in Detroit, in Milwaukee, in Philadelphia. This was the first time we were able to really see what was going on in these polling places. What that tells me is that probably a lot of these shenanigans that were going on for a long, long time, and there were no Republicans there to report on it. Now, I do remember there being some poll watchers in 2020. Somebody wrote, yes, they had this injunction in place for decades against the RNC. It was done because the judge believed they were intimidating voters. The RNC actually settled the case with that as the result. Again, we'll see. But I was a bit surprised at that. Now, because I'm surprised, I have skepticism. So obviously, usual caveats, I haven't guaranteed all of this stuff. But wild. All right. Did you see the podcast with David Best talking about civil war being inevitable in England within the next 5 years due to current trends, such as a two-tier justice system which favors migrants demographic? Yeah, I mean, I don't believe that there will be a civil war in the UK in the next 5 years. I mean, there are worse outcomes. All right. Any other last questions, comments, issues, challenges, donations for your friendly neighborhood philosopher? You can go to freedomain.com/donate to, of course, to help out the show. I really would appreciate that. And if you are listening and you're one of the 80 to 90% of people who listen and don't donate, at least on the locals platform, it might be time to do the right thing. It would certainly help me out. It does help me be more enthusiastic, and of course, I have my bills to pay, and I really would. Daily Wire going bankrupt? Is it going bankrupt? Really? Okay. I saw some stuff about it, but I was too distracted by Milo's poor cat. Okay. Is it going bankrupt? I thought that they were doing... Daily Wire CEO, co-CEO, Jeremy Boring, steps down. So I think didn't they make like $200 million last year? Yeah. Last year, Boring said the Daily Wire was on track to hit $200 million in annual revenue, and the company was valued at more than $1 billion in its most recent round of funding. So, but I don't think they're going bankrupt, are they? I mean, you'd have to work pretty hard to blow $200 million. U.S. U.S. Thanks for the show, Steph. Thank you, Jules. So I don't think the Daily Wire is going bankrupt. I don't know why the guy quit. I mean, everybody has their sinister theories, but trust me, if you have any prominence, anytime you do everything, people lose their minds and make up a whole bunch of stuff. They just make up a whole bunch of stuff. Oh, here's an interesting question. PC gamers spend what percent of their time in older games? Oldie. What percentage of PC gamers are playing older games? I thought that was quite fascinating. I think that's very funny. Ben Porter, director of the consulting firm New Zoo, is giving a GDC talk this week that picks out some highlights from the firm's annual look at the state of the games industry. PC Gamer was fortunate enough to get a sneak peek at his slides. And one of the takeaways is that PC gaming is bigger than ever, and we love to play old games. So, you're, what, 60%, 70%, 10%, 80%. So the actual number, according to this research, PC gamers spend 92% of their time on older games. Oh, and apparently there are 908 million of us now. 92% of their time on older games. And I cannot honestly remember. Doom, was it Doom 2016? When did Doom 2020? I can't remember. But the last Doom was like 5 years ago. I think that was the last game I played through. Other than, you know, some games I play with my daughter from time to time. I'm literally looking into Mule, which was an old Atari game that apparently is ported over to the Steam. A Mule was an old resource game that was a lot of fun. I remember playing that with friends when I worked up north. I did play a bit of Elden Ring. I thought Elden Ring was terrible. Very pretty. I couldn't figure out what the quests were, and the fights just weren't that much fun. And of course, I compare everything to one of the greatest games ever created, which is Skyrim. So I have not been able to get into a world. Yeah, all the new games, this DEI stuff and all of that, and they're just trash. Just trash. Yeah, the new games are woke, and I can't do it. I can't be lectured to. I can't get school-marmed when I'm trying to have fun. Like, I just can't do it. Andrew Yang posted, according to McKinsey, AI is going to impact and automate about 43% of American jobs. So AI, would you like a little rant, a little closing rant? AI is the only chance we have to raise the birth rate in the short run. Is AI going to automate road construction or HR? Whose jobs are going to get replaced more? Men's jobs or women's jobs? Right? AI is going to replace women's jobs more than men's jobs. And I'm not including automated driving in that, just the text-based sort of AI stuff. So men have made women significantly redundant. Let me ask AI. You know, that's a good question. That's a good question. Let's ask a local. I have a local. Oh, I think my local AI. Yeah, okay, what does AI say? What does AI say? Let me ask Grok. Best AI on the planet, in my humble opinion. Will AI affect, replace more men or more women? Let's do deep search. It's thinking. Ba-da-dum-ba. Yeah, from the search, it looks like AI is more likely to replace jobs held by women based upon multiple studies. Women's jobs like payroll clerks and secretaries are at higher risk. Please, please pay for Grok. I'm begging you. Please pay for Grok. Yeah, admin type stuff and all of that, right? Yeah. Yeah, Grok is just fantastic for research. Women are 50% more likely to lose jobs by AI to AI by 2030. Yeah, 50% higher risk for women's jobs. All right. It's still doing its thing. It's just amazing. Unbelievable. Yeah, the 50% higher likelihood of replacement is a big deal. Because if women are more likely to be replaced, then women's wages, to some degree, will go down. But it's not going to replace sewage workers. It's not going to replace bricklayers until robots come along. Well, look at that. I guessed and was right. Well, no, it's more than a guess. Educated guess. Okay, it's been going 1 minute, 47 seconds. Very cool. It's very cool. I mean, certainly when you call support, often you talk to women, and support is going to be AI because there won't be accent issues and it won't require particular training. So tech support or other kinds of support, totally going to go to AI. 8 out of 10 women are in AI replaceable roles compared to 6 out of 10 men. And men can do women's jobs, but in general, women can't or won't do men's jobs. So men can transition into other things more easily than women can. All right, I think it's just finishing up its run here. I sent something on DLive to say thanks, Steph. Have a good night. Thank you. I appreciate that. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It is gratefully, deeply, and humbly appreciated. All right, it's just finishing up here. Do believe. When I'm not with you, I lose my mind. Give me a sign. Hit me, baby, one more time. All right. That was a Harvard Business Review article, but that's from 2019, so I don't think that's it. Deep search is pretty thorough. It's pretty thorough. So, I mean, it certainly has changed. It's rewritten our business here quite a bit. I mean, it put AI on government waste. It would just be incredible. Incredible. I mean, I think that's some of what they're doing, isn't it? All right. It's just, I think it's just evaluating the AI data. It really is just incredible. could say, oh my gosh, it's so slow. 4 minutes and 20 seconds. It's like, yes, but this would be half a day. Can you imagine if I'd had this? It's so funny. I should be able to do the truth abouts much more now, but because with AI, I can do the truth abouts much more now, much more quickly. Let me see if you have any other questions. I don't think so. I don't think so. So if you are listening to this later, freedomain.com/donate, really would appreciate it. And I got some really, really great call-ins coming out soon. I did two call-ins today, like 3 hours apiece. I did two call-ins last night, finally got to bed at like 2 in the morning. So we've got some great, great call-ins are coming up. And I know, what did the AI say? It is still working. Assessing AI risks. And I think that more men than women are playing with AI, which means that men are going to get more AI skills than women as a whole. So, a World Economic Forum shows women use generative AI less, which might be a concern. It notes tech firms expect AI to replace non-customer-facing jobs often held by women. Non-customer-facing jobs, yeah, we all know what that means. Made-up HR nonsense. I mean, it's funny, too. It's like my whole life prepared me to be an insufferable know-it-all about these things. The Truth About the Wild West is great, by the way, Steph. Oh, thanks. Yeah, I did that one by hand. Except for the video. I got a fine fellow to do the video. Yeah, The Truth About the Wild West I thought was pretty good. You want to get some great stuff, man? The Truth About the French Revolution is fantastic. Available for your support. FDRURL.com/locals. It will do great things to your brain. Eight out of 10 women are in AI replaceable jobs compared to 6 out of 10 men. So that's twice, right? I don't think I've ever seen Deep Search go this long, 6 minutes and 45, as he vamps and vamps and vamps. All right. I think we're looping a little here. Feel free to finish. Well, I did ask for Deep Search, so I probably didn't need that. So not to disc rock. Again, this still would be at least 4 to 6 hours by hand, and it's 7 minutes so far, and I think it's just finishing up, so. And it's gone through 22 sources. Ugh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. But of course, the questions that I ask would not often be answered by AI because my questions are so unusual. I mean, that was the whole point of the truth about. What? Oh, refresh. Okay. Let me do two? Probably not, right? Yeah, I may have overcooked a little bit DeepSeek. I've not tried DeepSeek, no. I don't even know if I can I cancel a search? Oh, aborted. Okay. I must have hit refresh or something like that. Refresh. Okay. So I'm not going to do Deep Search. Oh, no. Stop. Okay. So I'm just going to do it without Deep Search and see what we get. Oh, so right away. Let's see here. So this is without the Deep Search. Yeah. So the Deep Seek. It says it's roughly equal now, but men could see slightly more displacement in physical jobs early on. Women might lag in adapting to AI-driven opportunities. Click on Think Harder. Interesting. So, yes, from what I was able to read, it's going to affect women a lot more. So I think that's pretty good. It lets you do two if you open a second tab. Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. Is DeepSeek worth trying? So AI might drive down women's wages and release them back to actually having children, which they're going to enjoy vastly more than 99% of them enjoy their so-called careers. And so AI could save us all in that way. So, all right. Well, thanks everyone for dropping by tonight. Really appreciate it. We'll see you guys Friday night. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful couple of days. Love you guys so much. Thank you. Thank you for keeping the show cooking for, this is going to be our 20th year. It was in 2005 that I published my first article, or had my first article published on Lou Rockwell. 20 freaking years. This show is getting very close to being able to drink in all US states. So I really do appreciate it. It's been a wild and truly incredible ride. And I am deeply, humbly grateful and thankful to all the supporters, all the donators, all the lovers, all the haters, all the call-in show participants, all the debaters, the arguers, the people I've had on my show, the people who've had me on their show. I'm actually doing an interview with a fairly well-placed guy not too long from now, which I think will be interesting and I'm looking forward to. And I really do appreciate you guys for this incredible ride and journey. Philosophy, really, and the world has never seen anything like it. And it has as much to do with all of you as it does to do with me. So thank you so much. All the best, my friends. Bye.